You're tuned into the Boba Bunch Podcast, Conversations of a Silicon Valley Sisterhood. Season 1, Boba Pod 4. There's no universe where we can retire. Grab a drink, get settled, and let's hop right in. Hello, and welcome back to the Boba Bunch. We are Katrine, Lucia, Crystal, and Jin. And welcome back. I know we've been away for the last 2 months because things have been really hectic in our lives. As we've seen, the Silicon Valley atmosphere has been kind of tense lately with tech layoffs and banking issues. But, you know, we're back and we miss all of you, and that, you know, you'll stay for this next hour with us as we talk about our random lives as usual. So to start off, we want to talk about boba, of course. We don't actually have drinks with us today because we are recording remotely. It's been storming here in California, in Northern California anyway, and it's kind of dangerous to go outside. But I've been asking the group, what are they drinking? What kind of new shops they've heard about being opened in the region? I went to TPT actually last week. It is, I think, a chain from Taiwan, and they mostly sell a lot of milk teas, but also fruity smoothies. So I do go to boba shops to buy fruit smoothies sometimes. And mango is always my favorite, but TPT is really good with their strawberry drinks. I don't know if they put strawberry jam or something. It's not entirely a fresh strawberry flavor, but I like it because it's sweet, and it's pink and makes me feel warm and fussy for some reason. Like it gives me a happy feeling. Has anyone else been drinking boba, or what are you craving? Any boba shops that you're craving right now?
To Kung Fu Tea over kind of maybe in between actually where you and I live, Katrine. And I love ginger, which I know is controversial. Like, not everybody likes it. It is very spicy, even when it's very sweet. But I got the brown sugar ginger hot tea, and it was everything I dreamed of. Also really sweet, even with zero added sugar. So just, I don't know, maybe it's my age, but it's it was very sweet, but very delicious. Like, I extended it into 2 days, added some water the next day. But something I've been doing at home for maybe a couple months now, I cheated and got a bag of taro powder from Amazon. And so I've been making my own taro lattes at home, and it's very cost effective. That doesn't mean I don't crave some good old boba, like regular milk tea with boba, but it's been a while since I've had that.
That sounds really good.
I guess in this area, there's a new place called Here Tea that I tried out because I heard from someone else that it was like the best place ever. And they got drinks like 3 times in the same day from that place. I don't have that same feeling just because there's so many boba options out here. I thought it was good, and they did have good options. I got like a fresh fruit tea. Usually when I'm out, I'll try to get something that's less creamier because I do have problems with dairy. But I do like milky drinks when I think it's okay for me to have them and if I have lactate supplied on me. But I got like a fresh fruit tea at Here Tea, and it was really good. I had fresh cut fruits inside of it, which I like. And then there's a TPT in this area as well. I don't know if we're talking about the same one, but I've never went there yet because they always have a super long line. So I'm waiting for a time when I go past and there's a shorter line for me to try it out.
Yeah, actually, just to follow up with what Crystal said, a lot of Asians have lactose intolerance, and I'm not really sure why Asians invented boba. Like, what are we thinking? What are we doing to ourselves? Yeah, just wanted to make that comment. Jin, what are you What are your boba cravings?
To be honest, I haven't been out for for boba for a long time. But recently, I have been making jasmine tea at home, which is very nice. I wish if they could have jasmine tea flavor boba tea, I would love to try it. And also, I realized that, I'm not sure if you know that Trader Joe's, they have this chai tea condense. And I figured that if we add some milk with the chai tea condense, it actually tastes very much like boba. And you can add a lactose-free milk. So easy to make at home. Yeah.
That's a nice life hack. Or finding things in Trader Joe's or any other stores. Yeah, I love jasmine tea too. And I actually never thought about brewing my own tea and then add milk or any kind of, you know, nut milks to it. But I think that's especially with Lucia's taro powder, I think that would make a really nice drink.
Next time we get together, maybe we can DIY.
Yeah.
Have you guys tried those at-home kits? Like, Costco sells, like, an assorted at-home kit for boba now.
I haven't tried the ones from Costco. But Costco has been carrying a lot of Asian snacks and products lately, which is kind of surprising and not surprising, because I did read that they're not target, but, like, the customer profile it's like a 34-year-old Asian American woman or something. Like that, they've done studies, and then they're like, this is the most likely kind of customers to visit Costco. So ever since then, they've been stocking a lot of Asian products. And I used to not visit Costco very often, but now I just go every week just to look and see what they carry. Yeah, they have a ton of boba, like even prepackaged boba in a cup, or boba ice cream. And I haven't tried it personally just because I still prefer a freshly made cup of boba. But if anyone listening has tried it, any boba products in store, let us know, because I do trust other people's opinions when it comes to food. Yeah, happy to try some. Cool. So thanks for sharing all of your boba stories since we've last met. Right now we're in March, which is Women's History Month. And it's it's a month where I tend to reflect on not only my journey, but also about the journeys of women who I know and who have made impact on me. So I thought we could take this moment to kind of share a little bit about, well, what it's like to be women. We are all four of us are women here, and how being a woman, like, what does that mean in terms of our careers and personal lives? So I want to ask the group here. Let's start off talking about careers. Like, what do you think that being a woman, especially here in Silicon Valley, like, how has that, I guess, either added or, you know, taken away opportunities from you? Like, have you personally experienced or heard about stories from other women who might have been kind of struggling due to just being a woman?
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, I think there had been times, I guess, working where we work, where I felt like having the qualifications for certain positions and stuff haven't even been enough. Being a woman, watching like other people come into positions of power and seeing their background and their work ethic and thinking like, wow, they barely even meet the bare minimum and they're doing great. And that kind of stuff is disheartening to witness. I've seen it, I don't want to say regularly, but it has happened regularly to see something like that happen.
It's really sadly, you know, I've also not, I guess personally for myself, my career path is actually more traditionally a female role, which, I mean, take that as you will for anybody working in tech, kind of pigeonholes me into one specific thing. But I've definitely witnessed my friends and colleagues see just really not be treated with respect or given the same opportunities. You know, I have one friend in particular who was absolutely harassed, and even with proof and visits to HR, nothing was done. And those people that were the like perpetrators of the harassment, not only did they stay, but continuously received promotions. And so that's, it's, I hate to see my friends going through that. I don't think any woman should have to deal with not being treated with respect or as an equal, whether it's in the workplace or just life in general. But you know, for myself personally, again, it is more of a female-dominated career path, but that also comes with its own lack of respect a lot of times. So it's interesting. It's an interesting thing to navigate. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with what Lucio was saying. There's a lot of assumptions made about what being a career woman means or how a career woman should behave. I like Lucia, was also in a role that is traditionally held by women, and trying to move up from that role was extremely difficult because once you work in a support role, let's put it that way, everyone kind of sees you as just a support. And in order to overcome that perception, we have to kind of dial it all the way up to the other extreme, as in you have to put yourself out there at all times, be on at all times, and be a go-getter in everything that you do. So it's disheartening to see that the only way to get a promotion or to move up the career ladder is to have to very dramatically present yourself to the world, even you know, despite your abilities. And sometimes it's exhausting to do that. Like, it's exhausting to be on all the time. It's exhausting to achieve all the time. Like, why can't we just be ourselves and be recognized for just being ourselves? You know, I personally definitely have felt the pressure to go above and beyond times 1,000 in order to even be heard or be seen. And thinking about my journey, I don't want anyone else who come after me to have to go through that at all. Like, it was just too much. It was not sustainable. And to think that so many career women also have to handle so much at home. You know, we have folks who you know, have children or have to take care of elderly relatives, parents, etc. They have to be on at work and then have to go home and continue to be on. It's very draining. So that's the conversation that's been ongoing, you know, about things like emotional labor, about how to better support women in the workplace. And it's not really, I think some people, you know, have that misconception that, oh, you know, we need to help women just because they're women. And that, you know, if someone says that to me, that just means that that person doesn't really understand what this movement is about. It isn't really about, oh, look, they are a group who constantly need support. It's really about recognizing that, you know, some of us may be coming from a place where we have been discriminated against because of our gender, and to take that discrimination away and to make things a more level playing field. Like Lucia and others, you know, I have also heard many stories of people trying to ask for help from HR or from leadership, but not really getting anything. And in fact, some people might also have been you know, experiencing revenge from speaking up. And that makes it hard for us as a group to want to speak up. You know, like if you say something, but then the response wasn't positive, why would I want to speak up again? And we don't want to cultivate that kind of environment, but unfortunately it happens. You know, we go to all sorts of work training classes, right? But then I don't see how effective any of those classes actually are. So I think it's more than just taking a class and getting some digital certificate saying that, oh, I've taken anti-harassment training. Like, no, it's really a personal development story for each of us, regardless of gender, right? Like to learn about each other and to really from the heart say that, you know, I want to support you and this is how I can do so. So, but outside of work, you know, there are also other, I guess, other sort of difficulties facing women. I mean, even just walking down the street as a woman, there's quite a lot that could happen. I guess I'll share. So after college, I spent 2 years in New York City. And if you've ever lived in the city, you know that there are lots of hidden social rules that a newcomer needs to really pick up really quickly. Whether it's, you know, walk, be careful of where you walk, or be careful how you look at people, or, you know, don't go into dark alleys by yourself, things like that. And I think in New York was the place where I personally anyway have experienced the most catcalling and random men coming up wanting to touch me and have been touched inappropriately. And unfortunately, like it felt expected. As a woman, I felt like it's an expected behavior from, like, for example, men to do that kind of thing to me. So then at that moment, I didn't speak up or I didn't do anything about it because it's just like, oh, well, that happens. But then now it's like, well, you know, now in retrospect, it's like, well, I wouldn't just turn around and smack them in the face. Like that would have been probably better than not speaking up at all. So yeah, I don't know. I'm sure that everyone here has had some sort of experience, similar experiences of different levels. Would anyone like to share anything or just stories from your friends or anyone that you might know?
I was just gonna say, I have a quick comment about, like, also the scary part about potentially fighting back is, you know, not to paint us as weak or anything, but it's just a fact that men are going to be stronger than us and usually bigger than us, and even if they're mm-hmm. not bigger than us, they're still strong. So it's like, what can you don't want to get hurt worse by retaliating. So I just want to say, like, for any of us that have ever gone through that, don't feel bad for not doing anything, because you have to consider your safety after that as well.
Yeah, I was gonna add to that, like, my dad has been providing me with things to try to defend myself for years. Like, he's given me pepper spray, he's given me like this weird gadget that you wear around your neck that has a sharp point so you can, I guess, use it as a weapon to defend yourself. But I've always ran the scenario through my mind, if the event ever happened where I had to use those things, like, what if I open it up and I spray myself in the face by accident? And like, because it's, you know, in the heat of the moment, I'm panicking. Or what if I take out that sharp object and they overpower me because they're physically stronger than me, and then I end up getting stabbed in the process? And those are concerns that I've had if those events ever had happened to me. So yeah, I am kind of hesitant to try to retaliate physically in those kind of scenarios. And I've had an incident where I worked in retail during college, and I used to work the closing shift every night when I worked. And I had a customer who would harass me often, but like when I was in the store, I felt okay because there's security cameras, my coworkers are there, and, you know, he would eventually leave. He'd only stay for short durations of time, but I closed the store once and my manager left for the night, and I was waiting for my ride to pick me up, and that customer came by, coincidentally, and he came up to me, and he was saying things to me, and I kind of froze up. I didn't know what to do, and he was, like, touching my face and saying things to me, and, you know, fortunately, there was a stranger, a guy I didn't even know, saw what was going on, and he came up to us, and he said that he knew me, and he was pretending to be my boyfriend, and saying that, like, hey, you know, I don't appreciate you talking to my girlfriend like this, and blah, 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 and he was, they had, like, a conversation where the guy was like, all right, I'm gonna leave, don't worry, and then the guy who was a stranger who stepped in asked me if I was okay, and was telling me, like, I shouldn't be waiting out here by myself at night, and obviously I knew that too. I was really waiting for my ride to come quickly, and I was just really grateful for the stranger that stepped in, because who knows what would have happened. And going forward, after I told my manager and the rest of my coworkers what happened, they set a rule that if me or someone else or another female has to close at the end of the night, that you have to stay with them until they get picked up. And so I thought that was a great initiative that we set going forth. But yeah, it's really scary being a female. I was in a big city. I was in San Francisco at the time. There's just a lot of people out there who don't have good intentions, and it's scary to be a woman in that world.
Yeah, I'm glad that a plan was implemented, and also that, you know, that guy was there to help you out. I mean, I also had a similar experience where I was working during university, also a closing shift, and there was this older guy who likes to come and hang out and where I work, and then just waits till everybody leaves and starts talking to me, and then at some point I think he asked for my email address, and I was just like, I don't have one. But yeah, it's definitely, like, as women, as girls, like young girls, we were raised to be told, you know, we were told that you need to be careful going walking about at night by yourself, or you know, bring someone with you. But the conversation is never about, you know, to the boys, like, don't do this to girls, you know, and that to me is, it's part of the problem. You know, everybody should be educated on what harassment is at a young age, because especially at a young age, when young boys and young girls don't really know what harassment is, and then they'll do something inappropriate, but then no one will call them out. Like when I was young, we, like in elementary school, we kind of lined up by our last name, first or last name. And then, so there was always a boy in front of me and a boy behind me. And then this was back when I was in Asia. So we were in school uniforms, and which is like a dress. And every time we go anywhere as a class, we have to line up in that order. And then we have to walk up the stairs at some point to go back to my classroom. And I know I felt very clearly that the boy behind me was kind of running his hand up my butt at some point. And I went, you know, I went and told an adult, but the response that I got was, well, just stay away from him. And I think as a kid, and I was probably maybe like 8. Yeah. And as a kid, it felt very helpless. And it set a precedence of, well, if there's any kind of creepy man in my life, I should just, all I could do was to just stay away. And I didn't think about the impact that that incident had on me until much later, when I realized, I still remember it. It's significant to a point where I still remember it as a grown up. And that wasn't the first. Yeah, it's to a young girl, to someone who's, you know, developing consciousness and awareness of your body, it's very confusing. You know, like, oh, it's okay for that to happen, and the only thing I could do was to just prevent it from happening. Like, how could we, you know, really prevent it, right? And that actually the boy who was sitting behind me, he had a history of harassing not just girls but like boys as well. Like he just does these things, and to me, I you know, now I look back and I think, you know, he just didn't know that that was inappropriate, right? But it's also the fact that no one's told him that it was inappropriate. Like that's why he kept doing it, and that's the problem. I do sometimes think about like what happened to this guy. I hope he figured it out that was not okay. And the thing is, that wasn't the first or the only thing that has happened, right? Like, for example, I told you in New York, a lot of inappropriate things have happened. I've had random strangers coming up to me as I'm waiting for the bus, just grab my hands and start kissing it. I've had times where I stand in a McDonald's trying to eat my meal and some guy would really quickly come up and grab my butt and ran off. Like, my memories are full of these stories, and I'm sure all the women, you know, have to deal with this every day. And it's not, harassment is not just a one-time thing, right? Because it stays with you. And it builds up over time. And that's why it is so important to educate both men and women, just educate everybody about what our experience is like. Sometimes it's really difficult to share, like right now, right? But then talking about it, putting a label on it, like this is harassment, also helps identify, you know, the kind of hidden feelings and processing the trauma that we all carry. So I really do applaud all the women, you know, that we see in the news who really stood up and talked about what happened to them, because they are the ones who gave us the courage to share as well and to really see how widespread this is. I think it's difficult to find a woman who hasn't experienced any sort of harassment.
Yeah. And I think it's also brave of them to come forward, because there's a lot of shame attached to some other situations too. Like they're blamed a lot of the times when they come forward, where it's like, hey, maybe you shouldn't have been wearing this. Maybe you shouldn't have been hanging out with them. Maybe you shouldn't have went with him somewhere and that's your fault for going. And no, that's totally not on them for, you know, getting attacked or raped or what have you. You know, there's two sides to the coin and there's two people involved in those situations. And I don't think every woman goes into a situation saying they want that to happen to them. So
yeah. Nobody goes anywhere wanting something like that to happen or expecting it, or it's completely unfair that it is oftentimes so turned around and nobody's held accountable. I mean, back to what Katrine was saying about this starting in elementary school, and sadly for a lot of girls younger than that, but I don't know. I feel like probably everybody went through this, but getting like your bra snapped by boys as soon as that time comes around, and it's like, first of all, it's already super awkward to start going through puberty and everything, and then to, you know, be kind of tortured about it, it hurts, you know what I mean, on top of that. And it is always just like, well, maybe your strap shouldn't be showing, what can you do, especially if you're in like a school uniform where nothing's showing, but it can be seen and it'll still be done to you. I hate that this is the case, but I feel like we'd be hard pressed to find anyone that hasn't dealt with some kind of harassment. And I can very clearly remember, something happening in my teens, something happening in my 20s, getting catcalled just outside where I live, which is very odd. Like, it's just weird, like somebody driving by. But even outside of work, I know it wasn't meant for me. It was meant for the person I was with. But there were like two times in a couple months where we were walking and she got catcalled like followed into a parking lot with somebody still calling out. And this is in the middle of the day outside, you know, in like a corporate slash retail area. It's just, I don't know. It's crazy. It happens all the time. And you really, like Katrine said, you don't really realize it until you realize how much you remember. And that kind of shapes your everyday activity even. So,
yeah, it's like what Krista was saying, you know, like always replaying in our heads how to use the tools that we're given. Yeah, like pepper spray. I also had that experience of, you know, how do I use this? How do I make sure I don't spray myself? Because, yeah, taking a little detour about pepper spray. So at my college, they almost every quarter semester, there's always a booth that sells pepper spray to targeting women, like female students. And I bought one once. And I then found out that you can only use it once. Like if you use it, you pretty much have to replace it. And so then that meant I couldn't test it. Because if I test it, then then I have to go get a new one. So then I was like, fine, I'll just have to practice how to use it. In my imagination. But then it's always like, well, what if it doesn't work? Like, I don't know how strongly I need to press on it for it to trigger. I did eventually at one point just go close to graduation. I was like, screw it. I'm just going to, you know, I found a field by the school and just started spraying it. But yeah, I think that is a concern. Like, sometimes it's not just having tools, but having training on how to use them, having the awareness of where to find help if you don't have tools, all of that. But then, you know, like, why is it on us as women to have to learn all of that, right? Yeah, I feel like, well, men learn not to do things. Don't do inappropriate things to women.
Yes. Because I think it's taught to them at a young age, even though we don't purposely try to teach them. Boys, for some reason, will teach other boys. Maybe they learn from older boys. Because I remember being in middle school and boys would bring magazines to school. I don't know if you guys had that experience too. And they were bringing magazines with scantily clad girls or girls who had nothing on. And they're sharing it with each other and then hiding it from the teacher. And I didn't want to be that snitch to tell the teacher that they had it. And they think it's okay to objectify women at a young age because they're so young and impressionable. And they're just, they grow up thinking that that's what women are for.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder, like, why isn't anybody starting it at home? Why aren't you teaching them how to respect everybody? Oh, it's just one of those things that I wish we could fix overnight, and just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But it really still is that way. It's okay, girls, be quiet, be seen but not heard, do what you're told. I mean, I don't know, like, I've seen this in this day and age where a boy and a girl in the same family will be treated very differently and told very different messages. And it's, I don't know, again, I'm not a parent, so I feel like I'm not trying to judge that. I just feel like equality and equity starts early, and we should just be taught that we're just all human beings when it comes down to it, that deserve care and respect. Back to tools. Sorry. Now that we had our pepper spray, somebody sent me something called a birdie. I think that's what it's called, where it's like a keychain. You can keep it on your keychain or your bag or something and pull it apart, and it'll make a really loud, scary sound. But what I liked about that is it tells you to try it. It's something reusable. It says try it in your home because it's scary. Like, get used to the way it sounds so that if you ever have to use it, you're not terrified too. I had no idea that pepper spray was one time only. That's actually really good to know, because that I never ever would have known that.
Yeah, the loud whistles. I bought one for my parents, and they couldn't figure out at first like how it worked. And then we were looking at it. And I was like, oh, you're actually pulling it, because they thought there was some kind of button that you need to press. And so we tried pulling it in the house, and yeah, don't do that. It's super, super loud. But yeah, I feel like now there's a lot more things, gadgets that you can buy to protect yourself. And I think everyone should look into it. You know, you never know what might happen. It might not even just be harassment. It could be other, you know, situations where you might need it. So, but yeah, I guess taking a tiny pivot here, you know, when we talk about harassment or discrimination against women, it's not always a young women thing. There's also the age discrimination happening, especially to women. I think there's the whole, you know, after you reach a certain age, you are no longer seen as, I don't know, like on, you know, like we think about young women who's energetic, who's beautiful and all of that. And then once you get past a certain age, people just assume that all of that takes a deep dive and no longer take you seriously, at least in terms of the way you look. Or on the flip side, they think that, you know, because you're an older woman, you should have a certain kind of wisdom or whatever behavior composure that an image of an older woman should have. And I think that's also another kind of an obstacle to cross. And for example, like I know certain women in certain career fields, once you get older, they start losing opportunities with their jobs. You know, they think that, oh, why not bring in younger ones who can do things faster or have more innovative ideas or whatever. And I see, you know, sometimes I do see at the companies I've worked at where older folks, especially women, will be laid off. And yeah. And it's difficult to see, because as a younger person, I was like, well, is this kind of the future that we're heading towards, right? Mm-hmm. And I guess I mentioned that because, you know, in my family, we still have several women, like my mom, who's still working. You know, we're all determined to work past retirement age, given the current economic climate. But just seeing what my mom has gone through, and then how difficult it is to convince someone to give her a job, especially when you're like a tiny older woman, people just assume that you can't, you know, do any lifting or any physical work, or and it's especially for, I guess, at least folks from our parents' generation, and I'm speaking from the Asian perspective, that a lot of them also grew up in an era where women were still expected to just stay home and raise children and didn't really go to school or have the skills to make a living. And for these women, all that they could do is really rely on their husbands or families to get through the rest of their lives. So I feel like it's just so many things kind of stopping them from having a full life. And I don't know. I guess I brought it up because I've been thinking a lot about my elders within the family and what and how hard it is that they've had to work to maintain a certain level of lifestyle, right? And to kind of raise me and build a family. And then as a newer, you know, I shouldn't say newer. I was gonna say like as a newer generation stepping into old age, because I'm getting old, and you know, like how should I prepare for my futures? I guess is what I'm trying to say. Yeah, I don't know. Has anyone thought about that? Because I do sometimes think about, like, because I am approaching middle age. I hate that term. I'm like, why? How did I get to middle age?
I know. I hate thinking about it. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm gonna be this old this year. Oh, when did that happen? But thinking about, I just feel like I don't even know how it's going to be possible to retire. But pivot, like, not for myself, just what you're saying about your mom makes me think about my husband's mom, who, you know, they came over during the Vietnam War. She had 6 kids. I know she's worked her entire time here, coming, not speaking any English, and she's still working. She's turning 70 in a couple months, and she's still working in a physical job. This tiny little woman, I don't know how she's making it here. And she still, like, if she has something to give you, she will give it to you. If she can make you food, she will do that. If she sees you looking at something and thinks you might like it, she'll show up on your doorstep with it. And I just think about, I always tell her, like, it's so appreciated, but I feel so bad because I don't want things to be hard for her anymore. It's like, please hold on to it. Please. Like, I don't want to take anything from you because I want you to be able to relax at some point in your life. And just, I don't know. It's crazy. The work ethic is insane. Just the giving nature on, and all I wish I could do is help to change that and make it better. But at the same time, living where we live, it's not like there's any extra to spare, like, regardless. And so I sit and I just wish there was a way for her to be able to retire. Like, she shouldn't be having to work a physical job at 70. Then again, I don't know how any of us are going to retire anymore.
There's no future where we can retire. My pessimistic self is coming.
I feel the same way.
We have to do a lottery pool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so hard, especially living. Yeah, I know you mentioned Lucia living out here in the Bay Area. It seems like it's like harder and harder, just to not even get to retirement, just to get to like what we think is the standard of the American dream.
Yeah, a house. I feel like
I haven't even reached that point, let alone retirement.
And I feel like I don't want to have to move to the middle of nowhere to be able to afford it. But
same.
It's something I think about a lot. Like, I guess maybe I'm just going to be a permanent renter, which is also hard. But what can you do?
Speaking of the American dream, I mean, lots of us we or our families are immigrants to the country and really worked really hard to even just making it through every day. You know, I know my parents definitely did, whether it's holding down multiple jobs or, you know, facing a lot of negative comments about their accents or, you know, their food, etc. It probably takes a whole other episode just to talk about the immigrant experience, and we probably should do one. But I really admire the strength of those who come before us, and how much courage and strength it takes to get through every day facing so many things. Yeah, it's not just about money. Like, money is on all of our minds, but it's also, you know, not knowing the language, the culture. How do I raise children in this completely strange place? And somehow they all figured it out. And I think it's just such an amazing journey. And like Lucia said, because, you know, our parents and grandparents have worked so hard to give us the opportunities that we have, and that's why we want to give back. And so for me anyway, sometimes I'm frustrated because I feel like I'm not at that level of success where I can give back to my parents. But you know, that's something that I'm constantly chasing after. That's my life goal, right? And I think a lot of children of immigrants can relate to that, because we do, as much as, for example, as much as Asian kids complain about our Asian parents, we do know how hard it was for them to provide this lifestyle for us. So, you know, that's Hopefully, you know, one day we can all give back and give our parents a comfortable life and a life that they've sacrificed so much to create. But this reminds me of another topic. So thanks to all the ladies here for sharing your stories, because this is kind of an intense session today. And I'd like to end with something lighter. So speaking about immigrants and the American dreams, that reminds me of the award season is happening in the entertainment industry. I am extremely biased. I'm going to say it. I love Everything Everywhere All at Once, which is about the immigrant experience and the American dream and all the wackiness that goes with it. But yeah, I just want to get your thoughts. You know, who are you cheering for? We've got so many exciting nominees, not just in film, but also in like acting categories. We've got lots of strong women, lots of older women, older actors, you know, folks who deserved awards and recognition a long time ago, finally getting that opportunity. So any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, like you were saying, a lot of the women that are nominated this year, I didn't notice it until like the Golden Globes season or when the Golden Globes were on, where they mentioned that a lot of the women that were nominated were above the age of 60. And I was like, geez, they look great for 60. And they're all doing so, like they're doing these powerhouse movies. Like, I think it was Michelle Yeoh just turned 60. There's Jamie Lee Curtis. Angela Bassett was amazing in Wakanda Forever. I know Jennifer Coolidge, who's always been like a side supporting character, has been getting so much praise during award season. And it's just amazing to see, because usually in the entertainment industry, they say like, you know, once you hit like a certain age, you're out, like you're just in for grandma roles and that's all you're ever going to be after that point. But they're playing like, you know, they're in action movies. Like Michelle Yeoh is playing an immigrant mother in a multiverse where she has like, you know, she has all of these great martial arts skills and everything like that. She's kicking butt in the movie. That's something amazing to see. And I'm not, you know, near their age yet, but it's great to see something that your life won't be over once you're at a certain age.
Yeah, especially if we're not ever going to be able to retire. I like to be them. You know, they're also not retiring anytime soon since they're still working. But yeah, I think this season has been very hopeful. Like I've abandoned award shows for a very long time just because it's usually the same and nothing exciting. But I think this year I'm actually looking forward to a lot of the results. And I guess as Asian American women, especially this year is a big year for us. And just to see the love and support from other communities as well. It's been amazing to see this surge of Asian and Asian American films on the big screen. You know, like I personally know someone who is now inspired to pick up her acting dreams again, because before it's always like, well, there are no roles for us, you know, for people who look like us. But now it's like, oh, you know, maybe there's an opportunity, and you know, she signed up, you know, for headshots and trying to get an agent again and trying to relive that dream again. And I think that's exactly what representation means. It's being able to see that hope and having that something where it keeps you, your dreams going. Because if before it's kind of like flat out saying, you know, it's impossible. It's impossible for you to be in Hollywood at all. But now it's like, well, you know, like there is a goal to work hard for. And I think hope is really important for us in our daily lives. And it's just so great to see. But so any specific movies or shows that you are cheering for, or anything that you've seen this past year? I mean, even if they're not nominated, that you really loved?
I mean, I'm also so excited for Everything Everywhere All at Once. It was amazing. Michelle Yeoh, such a badass. Like, I just want to keep seeing the awards come in for them. So I just did a quick look. I don't know if I saw anything else this year. I just watched Avatar, but I still think that compared. Like, there's no comparison. So that's who I'm looking forward to. Yeah, in terms of television, I've been like watching stuff that's been out for a while. Like, I randomly came across Abbott Elementary on HBO Max and I'll binge the heck out of it. Like, I loved it. It's, yeah, it's so fun. So I'm glad to see someone else likes it too. Yay, Crystal. I can't wait for the second season to be available for me to binge. It's like, it's wholesome and relatable. And even though, you know, we're not in the teaching industry, I feel like maybe just some of the struggles are similar and it's just entertaining in general. Yeah, so I'm not very caught up on the new stuff.
Yeah, and I want to add that Charlie Ralph is in Abbott Elementary and she was also winning awards during award season as well and getting recognition. She's been in sitcoms forever growing up, but it wasn't until now that she started getting nominated for things.
Oh my god, she's so funny. Yeah. When I saw her, I was like, what's she been in? Her face is so familiar. So, love to see it.
She was the mom in Moesha, if you ever watched Moesha.
There we go, Moesha. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love her too. She's hilarious. I watched an interview that she had, and also Ki Hui Kwan was on that interview as well. And mm-hmm. It was so nice to see both of them just talking about their long career journey and what it took to get to where they are, and just happy to see both of them being nominated, especially because I feel so much for folks who really tried hard but just never getting that recognition. I think I'm hoping, crossing my fingers, that this year is gonna be that year, where the heartwarming year. For everybody that I also am not very caught up. I'm on new shows and everything, but I also love Wakanda Forever. I guess talking about, I love Angela Bassett and I'm so glad that she's nominated as well. But yeah, those are my top two movies, actually. Wakanda Forever and Everything Everywhere All at Once. Like I said, Everything Everywhere touches me in many ways, not only because their costumes are just so realistic, like many Asian sets. Parents dress like that. Like I could see, my dad had a fanny pack and that kind of vest. Like I just saw my dad in that movie, and you know, hearing Chinese spoken, hearing Cantonese spoken was great. And just seeing how everything felt like such a mess, but then it kind of came together very beautifully. It was such a great achievement in the script writing, but also the cinematography as well. I read somewhere that this movie is a movie about ADHD. And I had this discussion with my husband who has ADHD, and I asked him if he could relate to it. And definitely there's that part of being overwhelmed and also kind of your mind drifting off into fantasy land sometimes when people are talking to you. And I think that part he really related to. But yeah, when I was, you know, talking about that, I thought, oh, this is cool, because this movie not only, just the intersectionality of this movie, like it's not just about women, not just about Asian or immigrants, it's also about, you know, neurodivergent folks and people who might think that they're, you know, misfits to society, kind of all coming together and try to, I guess, fight your way through this crazy, crazy universe. I just like the message behind it. But yeah, and also all the googly eyes.
Yeah.
I love The Rock with the googly eyes. It was a movie that I really thought a lot about. I hope it continues to sweep the season. I want to see, I love Michelle. I've always loved Michelle. She's a childhood idol, but I also really love Ki. I love Ki Hui Kwan. Yes. Just his story, and I just want to take this moment to just talk about how wonderful he is. Not only because of his background story, but also just the way that he's been presenting himself during this whole award season. It's so refreshing to see a guy, like a man, willing to cry on camera and during acceptance speech and in interviews. Like, he's really showing his genuine self, and I just want to applaud that, because a lot of times, especially for Asian men, you know, they were raised to be like, you have to be manly and don't cry. Like, do not, you know, do anything that takes away from your masculinity. But, you know, Ki kind of comes up and just was just being so genuine. And I think that's part of the reason why we all want to support him. You know, he's definitely that one underdog that everybody wants to be like, he's got to win. And just that his story it resonates in a way where, you know, I also know so many people who spend their entire lives chasing a dream and then at the end couldn't really reach it. And so in a way, we were also rooting for those people as well through him.
Yeah. He's had that really humbling story, because, I mean, I recognize him. I think that you guys do too, as a child, being in like the Goonies and being in Indiana Jones as a child. I recognized him a little bit before the Everything All at Once craze happened. He was in that movie Finding Ohana on Netflix. If you guys watch that, with Kelly Hu was the lead actress or the mother in that movie. And he made an appearance in that movie because it was comparable to like the Goonies. And I was like, wait, that kid, that's the kid from the Goonies. I was like, that's Dina. And I was just so happy that happened for him. And then when Everything Everywhere All at Once happened, I was like, oh my God, this guy's blowing up right now. And that's amazing, because I haven't seen him for years. And then hearing his backstory through all these interviews, that he's been like in the background in Hollywood for so many years because he wanted to be in the foreground, but he didn't see that there was a place for him. And then he was inspired when Crazy Rich Asians blew up, that, oh my gosh, like, people are recognizing us as talented actors, and that we can be the people in front of the screen. And that's been like such a great journey to watch. And I've been so happy for him every time I see him win an award. And I think it's so great too that Steven Spielberg has been in the room every time that he's been there, because he's also been nominated for The Fablemans this year. But being able to be with the man who gave you that start as a child and being able to thank him there in the room too has been very touching for me to witness. Like, this, it's been decades in the making.
That's amazing.
And James Hong, too, I want to mention, is also in the movie, too. And he had, like, a really great speech, I think, at the SAG Awards that was hilarious, well-deserved. And, you know, it took him so long also to be on that stage to be able to accept awards. And I think he's 94 years old, and he's still doing it. And he's still doing, like, action sequences. Like, this guy is really living proof of, like, it's really not over until it's over.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's hilarious too. Like, I've been watching interviews with the cast, and just his speech at the SAG Awards, it was just very powerful about his journey, you know, from working alongside Hollywood greats like Clark Gable, you know, and then, you know, being told that, you know, there are having Caucasian actors play Asian roles because, you know, Asian actors, you know, you guys are not box office. Like, I really remember that quote, because yeah, that really summarizes the entire Asian American experience. And just so happy to see him being like in his 90s and so energetic and healthy and being on stage and just being himself. It's such a joy, and I hope that continues. But yeah, a little thing about Steven Spielberg. So I was watching an interview with Ki, and he mentioned that Steven Spielberg has been sending him Christmas gifts every year for his entire life. And that was just so touching. that, you know, not only was he, you know, in a movie together as a child, but then the director remembered him this whole time. And then kind of coming full circle at the award season this year, where, you know, like Crystal says, you know, Spielberg was always there. And then And then every time Key gives a speech, I just cry. Like, he has that power. He's a very well-spoken person. I love him. He's actually been in several Hong Kong movies, apparently, and worked behind the scenes in some really, really famous ones. So, like I said, everybody in this cast has worked hard their entire lives, and hoping for the utmost recognition for all of them.
It's kind of hard for the supporting actress category, though, because I'm torn, because Stephanie Hsu and Jamie Lee Curtis are both nominated, I want them both to win.
Yeah.
He's so lovable. I just wanted to say, you just can't help but, like, love everything that comes out of his mouth and root for Kehui Kwan. It's amazing.
I feel like he's like the normal person living up the dream among the stars right now. Like, he's taking selfies with everyone. Like, he's, I feel like he'd be like one of us at the award shows. And it's so awesome for him.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. And hopefully this inspires more other dream chasers to keep chasing their dreams. I know I feel inspired every time I hear a speech from the cast and from others, and to see things are able to come to fruition, like to see the possibilities, and it definitely helps, especially on this gloomy day here in the Bay Area. But yeah, I think it's been a good discussion, and we will wrap it here. We will do our best to stick with our monthly schedule and bring new boba introductions to all of you. But thanks for sticking around, and hope all of you are having a wonderful March, and we'll see you next month. All right, take care. Bye. You were listening to the Boba Bunch podcast, hosted by Katrine, Lucia, Crystal, and Jin. Intro and outro music by Audio Coffee on Pixabay. Sound effects by Dreams to Become on Pixabay, and originals recorded by Katrine. Produced and directed by Katrine Chow. And made with love in the San Francisco Bay Area.